Oh, I was just checking with Sandy to make sure we were good. No worries. Is it good afternoon or good evening, everybody? I don't really know what 4:30 counts as, but I'm going to go with good afternoon. I'm going to call our meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, January 11th, and at 4:32 p.m. Let's do the pledge first. If you'll join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And I'll combine the next two things, which is confirming quorum and doing welcome and introductions so we can meet our newest member. Welcome to the table. I'll go first, so we come around this way, so you're not on the spot. Let's see. I'm Ellen Schmidt. We have met a couple of times now. I am currently serving as your chair, and I think I've been on the commission 5 years, but I'm very bad at this game of timelines. I am a person who was selected by the Ethics Commission to serve. That's how I came to be on the commission. JJ, do you want to
comment? I'm JJ Dixon. Obviously, I'm in. Commission member appointed by the sheriff's office, the sheriff.
I'm Linda McCallum, and I'm a member appointed by Chief Judge Mahan.
Eric Freiberger, and I teach philosophy and public policy at Jacksonville University, and I was appointed by the former councilman, Tommy Hazuri.
Kirby Everdorfer, I am the executive director of the Office of Ethics, Compliance, and Oversight. Nice to see you.
Hello, Paige Johnston. I am with the Ethics Office as well. I am the Ethics Attorney, and I am new to this position as well, so joining my first full-fledged meeting as well. So welcome.
And I'm Sandy Homerickhouse. I'm the Executive Assistant in the Ethics Office.
Hello, Cherry Pollack, and I'm an attorney assigned. I'm not the same attorney as Paige. I'm the attorney from the Office of General Counsel assigned to provide counsel for the entire commission.
Thank you. And I am William Maul. I think I'm one of the newest commission members. I was appointed by the public defender. I'm a local attorney here in town practicing tax law, and I'm very excited to be here.
Welcome.
Latanya Lipscomb-Smith, commission member, and I was appointed by the Ethics Office.
Thank you. And Andrew, did you get to introduce yourself?
By Paige over there.
Oh, but you can be on the head. Andrea Myers, Ethics Office.
Thank you. And if I counted correctly, we have 8 members and 6 are present, so we definitely have quorum. So let me turn things over to Kirby for our ethics thought.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So our ethics thought for today comes from the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, who said that in a civilized life, law floats in a sea of ethics.
I like it. Thank you, Kirby.
Inspiring for the new year, I hope.
Law floats in a sea of ethics. Let's move on to our second section of the agenda, which is minutes approval. I will happily entertain a motion to approve the Ethics Commission meeting minutes from October 10th if someone wants to make such a motion.
I will make that.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Anybody have any issues with that? Nope. Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes as they were submitted to us, say aye.
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 Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay, so that motion carries, and I will, as you might imagine, accept or entertain a motion to accept the minutes from the nominating committee meeting, which was held on November 29th.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Any discussion about those minutes from anybody who was there? Anybody? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay. That business is finished. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for submitting the minutes to us, Sandy. For reports, we'll turn first to Kirby.
Thank you so much. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. It's been a little while since we've all been gathered together. I wanted to thank everybody who was able to attend the holiday party for coming out and participating in such a nice event. It was nice to have a chance to get together. It's the first time we've done that in quite some time before the holidays, so it was lovely seeing everyone that could make it. So we have been exceptionally busy in the ethics office, and that would not be an overstatement. You can ask Sandy, Andrea, and Paige. We have a robust list of things to do that spans multiple pages, as you hear. It's my daily diary, so to speak. Some important highlights. We spent a lot of December developing training for our elected officials who have to qualify for office this week. They will be required to file electronically their financial disclosure forms this year. Not you all. You get a reprieve till next year. Be glad. It's been quite a tricky system. And so we developed training. We worked with the State Ethics Commission. We gave them a step-by-step guide. We put a lot of time and energy into trying to prepare them as best as we could for a brand new filing system. The filing system opened January 3rd for them, and they began qualifying January 9th. So they had a very short period of time by which to gather all their year-end financial information, prepare and file their financial disclosure form, and then qualify for office. So that has commanded a great deal of our office resources, but we've gotten some good feedback, I think, on the training and some of the help and things that we've assisted with. We're working on about 12 different conflict matters. And we have a very robust training schedule that we have been doing. We did train our new sheriff, Mr. Waters, or Sheriff Waters. We trained him in December. We trained the council members in December. We trained the CPAC chairs and vice chairs in December. We have a bunch of trainings that we're working on for JEA managers, JHA managers, and employees. We've already sent out training information and reminders to the council members and staff for this new year. And we are working, we'll have hopefully a training today if we can get technology to cooperate for the commission. Oh, I get a double thumbs up for my tech guru, Andrea. So that's exciting. So we've been working on a ton of training initiatives. I can't even count them all. It's pages of requests that we have. And then a lot of internal office things as well. So we have two important things to follow up with you all on. Last year, the Inspector General issued a couple of reports that had some recommendations for corrective actions that requested the Ethics Office to prepare either training or a letter to vendors apprising them of giving gifts and the dangers and the limitations and those kind of things. So we have a good draft of the vendor letter that we're getting ready to send over to the IG's office and make sure it includes everything that they've been seeing. And we have put together a draft training for employees that manage contracts because that's been a recurring issue in the city. And we're getting some feedback on that, and then we will send that to employee services. And last but not least, another huge important piece of our resources lately have been working with employee services in a collaborative fashion to develop a conflict of interest and secondary employment combined policy and form for the city to streamline. We have two different policies right now, and they seem to overlap, and they cause a lot of confusion. And so we've worked really hard to streamline those policies, to put them in user-friendly language. Andrea developed an amazing form that lists a bunch of different, and when it's finalized, we'll share it with you, a bunch of different things that may give rise to a potential conflict or might need to be looked into to see if it does. Different types of secondary employment you may have, or different connections to entities you may have that needs to be reviewed so it doesn't result in an issue for the city or the employees. So anyway, that's a big summary from our work. Anything else, Paige? And Paige! Paige joined the office! Woo! That's right. That's right. But since we last met, Paige has joined the office going with somebody that's experienced both in ethics laws and in the city of Jacksonville has been a game changer, truly. We didn't really have much time to orient her. She jumped right in, but she's been able to hit the ground running and has helped on a lot of important initiatives. So many, many, many thanks to Paige.
Yes,
So.
I have, oh, we go ahead.
Permission, Judge when Pinella. You're done with this, I'd like to back up to an issue that we already kind of did.
Oh, yeah, of course. I was going to ask Kirby a question. When you were talking about the training that you're going to do for people who prepare contracts, we talked about secondary employment. Will you talk to them about post-employment potential issues depending on their role with a contract so that they know what their obligation is? Is that
yes,
part of what you're going to do?
Absolutely. And that we are also including in the letter to the vendors.
Fantastic.
So the recommendation from the IG was to get advice out to the vendors on gift restrictions and how to stay within the law and then how to report things, and we have decided it needs to be broader than that. There are other provisions that apply to vendors, like the post-employment, hiring somebody that's worked on your contract, you know, for 2 years after they've stopped working with the city, and some conflict of interest disclosures that have to be done and those kind of things. So we have broadened it, but yes, we are doing that.
And since we're talking about training, I'll tell you why I was smart enough to ask that question. It's because the chair of this committee serves on the post-employment appeals committee. So when an employee is seeking a job with somebody that they worked with before, they have to get permission, I guess, is the thing. We'll have a moment for public comments just a little bit later, sir. Judge McCallum?
What I wanted to go back to is we kind of glossed over. We all approved the minutes for the nominating committee, but I did want to say, obviously, our nominating committee did recommend that we appoint Mr. Simpson to the commission, and I just, for those who weren't there present for the meeting, I just want to mention that Mr. Simpson is here, and his resume is in the packet, and we're really excited to have him aboard.
Thank you. Listen, I'm going to give you a moment to shine on that in a few seconds.
Oh, I didn't see it on the agenda.
It is okay. You will have the opportunity to talk a little bit more about what the committee did and our recommendation, and then we'll vote on Mr. Simpson's application, but on our recommendation, on the nominating committee's recommendation for him to serve.
Thank you
for that.
I had a question for Kirby.
And JJ has a question for Kirby.
I know we're all over the place tonight.
No, that's all right.
I have a question in reference to your report on the vendor letters.
Yes.
How are those letters going to be distributed? Is there going to be a packet? How does that get to the vendors? And then how are we sure that they're getting that information?
That's a great question. So we know one piece of information in response to we're looking into that is really the overall answer. The first piece is for the contracts that go through our procurement division, there is a portal that vendors log into to see bids that have been posted and to post replies and those kind of things. So we've confirmed with the procurement division chief that it will be posted on the portal. Then you have a whole set of different contracts that are directly provided for in the budget or through an ordinance through city council. So they don't go through procurement process because they're directly given either by the council or by the mayor and approved by council in the budget. And so we're trying to figure out the best way to get to who those contracts might be with and the best way to get them to them. So it's a work in progress, but we will update you on that.
Thank you. Does anybody else have a question for Kirby about the report? Anything you want more information about? No. Okay, excellent. Cherry, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, my pen has run out of ink.
Do you need to borrow one?
So I was looking for another one if anybody has extra.
Okay. Here. Okay. Here, borrow mine.
Oh, here comes one.
Yes, don't throw that at me. But thank you anyway, Mr. Oliver.
She's not here.
Thank you.
I'll
borrow
it.
No major report. It's just that we're busy with some really major litigation, and if you read the paper, you'll know what it's all about. So I don't want to comment on any litigation.
Well, thank you. And
no, I don't have anything here. That was just my report. That's it.
Mm-hmm. For Darcy,
welcome.
We are so happy
that's
you're
right.
Here. We are up to your report. Do you feel ready, or do you need a minute to settle and we can come back to you?
No, and I apologize for my tardiness. The Complaints Committee has one pending case.
That's right.
Okay, excellent. And there are multiple committees. You might talk about this in training. There are multiple committees of the Ethics Commission, but only one is required to give a report at each meeting, which is why Darcy's committee is called out in the agenda, and we made sure to address it because there's a rule or a requirement.
Yes.
Okay, so that ends our Section 3, and we're on to new business. And new business is where Judge McCallum is going to fill us in on more details about Mr. Simpson.
Well, thank you.
You're actually welcome.
So the nominating committee met. All of us were there. We interviewed several people. All were excellent, and actually we got to meet Mr. Maul at one of those meetings. But at the most recent meeting, we met Mr. Simpson again for the second time. We really appreciated you coming back down again. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed Mr. Simpson again as well as another candidate. And we considered all of the candidates. And after our consideration, our discussion, the committee recommends that we, as the commission, appoint Mr. Simpson.
Excellent. And I'm stretching my brain on Robert's Rules of Order, and I think because it's brought forward by a committee, we don't have to have a motion and a second to consider the recommendation that Mr. Simpson be selected by the commission. But we do have a matter of practice. We invite public comment. At this point in time, we'll accept public comment only on the subject of Mr. Simpson's appointment. Later in the meeting, there'll be an opportunity for broad public. Excellent. Do you have a public comment regarding Mr. Simpson, sir?
Yes.
Okay, you have 3 minutes. I'll go ahead and set the timer.
I want to get on the microphone, that way it's recorded. And I want a response.
I won't start the timer until you start. Sandy, can you help direct towards a microphone?
Yes. With the next upcoming member of the Ethics Commission, one of the things I want to know is what is the initiative that he's taking on? Because the thing about it is that we have alignments of certain people that represent our judiciary branch. And one of my biggest focus is cracking down on the corruption of all functions of our local government. That means increasing transparency, self-reporting, things of that nature. And I want to know what that board member is going to take an initiative to do in that area. When it comes down to city contracts, these grants that support nonprofits, what is his focus in that area?
Thank you for your comment. Oh, sir, I should have asked you to say your name for the record. Will you go ahead back up and just say your name so it's recorded? My apologies.
Yes, my name is Carney Oliver, and that's my name for the record. Address is on file.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. So having heard the report from Judge McCallum and our discussion and having heard public comments, and thinking and looking at Cherry that I'm correct that we don't have to have a specific motion because it's brought forward from a committee, yes or no?
I think someone should move.
Let's do it then.
That'd be a point. I will make that motion.
I second.
Any further discussion? So just for the clarity of the record, the motion is for the commission to accept Mr. Simpson as our
commission member.
So all those in favor?
If I may, before you go, no, you didn't miss anything. I just think it might be helpful for people that are not here, if they were to listen to the recording, to have some information about Mr. Simpson and his qualifications.
Sure.
Do we want Mr. Simpson to provide
them? Either way, whatever you're comfortable with.
Mr. Simpson, let me let you do that. You did it so excellently with us.
All right. Good evening. My name is Scott Simpson. I've just recently retired from a 28 and a half year career in the Navy. During my service, I was privileged to gain greater positions of responsibility as I continued on. And in those roles, I many times had to deal with situations or ethical dilemmas, and in some cases adjudicate them in a variety of the roles that I served in. Last year, July 1st, I transitioned out of the Navy and decided to enter the private sector. I'm excited about that. But after almost 3 decades of service, I was trying to figure out where I could serve locally when an email came across my computer from the Institute for Veterans and Military Families advertising this particular role, this volunteer role, on the committee. And since it so closely aligns with what I did in, with some of the things that I did in the Navy, it was a great opportunity for me to be able to get back to Jacksonville and join the committee and be of assistance to the citizens of Jacksonville. So excited to be here. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a good idea, Kirby. I appreciate it. So now we have a motion on the table, and we've heard from Mr. Simpson. So all those in favor of the motion to appoint Mr. Simpson to the commission, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is anyone opposed? Okay. Congratulations. You've been appointed, and you can come sit at the table if you like.
That's right. Now he's officially a member.
Correct.
Just for your information, the next steps for Mr. Simpson, although per the code he is officially a member upon his appointment, which is what you just did, the next step is that he needs to go before council, as all of you have gone, for his confirmation. And so Cherry will be drafting that legislation and help us get it filed. And then it's about a 5 to 6 week legislative cycle, as you're all familiar with. He will meet with the members of the Rules Committee to introduce himself, to talk about his qualifications and his interest in the commission and how he might best serve the commission and the community of Jacksonville. And then he will go before the Rules Committee and from there proceed to City Council. So we will certainly keep you apprised of the confirmation process.
Thank you. Next up on the agenda is legislation on ethics training. Kirby, I think that's...
Yes, so it's a tag team of... me and then Paige. So currently in the ethics code, you have before you in your packet a draft piece of legislation. Bless you. It has it's a document that's numbered 1 to 31 on the left-hand side. So and then it's double-sided and it has a bunch of words. And so it's a draft ordinance, if you will, piece of legislation. But it's a housekeeping measure to update a current provision in the ethics code. So the section that we're looking at in this draft legislation is section 602.1001 that talks about the ethics education program for the city and lays out their requirements. And on the second page, if you flip your page over under paragraph B, there is a paragraph that talks about the timing of ethics training to be provided to elected officials. And the current language reads that the training shall not be provided less than 45 days following certification of an election. I'm not certain how that language got in there, but that is certainly not current practice, and that's a long time to wait for training on ethics laws when they are actually applicable either as a qualified candidate or immediately sworn upon office. So, in addition to that, there was robust discussion and debate in our office about the interpretation of that and what that really meant. And so we thought from a housekeeping perspective, it would be good just to clean it up and to strike out the provision with the for the 45 days. And so that's what you have before you. So if you agree with that, then we would have that filed in council and it would proceed through the legislative process.
Question?
Yes.
What is the difference between a digital certificate and a digital confirmation? What does that mean?
That's great. So on the back side and towards the end on line 16 and 17, it talks about they would be issued. Currently, it says a digital certificate, and it's going to be changed confirmation. The practice right now is that Sandy does issue a certificate for each and every person that we train. We train over 1,000 people each year. So it's getting to be somewhat burdensome and onerous. In addition to the legislature each year keeps adding more training requirements or taking them up for consideration. So we thought some people might get just an email confirmation, hey, you've completed this, but others might actually get a certificate, particularly if they're required by state law to report that they've completed their ethics training. So we just wanted a little bit of leeway with that.
Thank you.
Great question.
Anyone else have a question or a comment about the proposed change to the legislation?
I just wanted to, from an OGC perspective, I did have a robust conversation with Paige today. I got it for the first time and reviewed it today, and so we're okay with the proposed language. I did want to just make sure that Paige, so the form approved portion, did you want to put my name there? So that way it is on record that OGC is...
Cherry, per the council rules, there's the form approved with the blank. Your name isn't inserted per legislative services. You sign, and it will be acknowledged when the bill is filed, and you can pull it up digitally. It will show that you signed it, your name. But first you'll do the signature, and then they'll upload your name. There's not a place here, even though it says Office of General Counsel, it's not under the council rules to put your name right there.
Okay. So when will you file this or do you want me to file it?
The intention would be for us, if they take action to move forward with this, then I would send it to you and you would form approve and submit it for next week for filing.
Perfect. That's all.
And that's why your signature would be there for form approval.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Kirby, you're asking us to vote on whether we support this change?
Yes.
Is there any more discussion or questions?
No, I move that we support the change. It's logical. Makes sense.
Okay. The public comment?
I was going to do public comments once I had a motion.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine, yes.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
Before a quick point, just to ask, to clarify why I'm asking, at the top of the page, on the first page, you'll see that it says that this legislation will be introduced by the council president at the request of the commission. So that is one of the reasons that we're asking.
Thank you. So having a motion and a second, Mr. Oliver, if you have any public comments on... Yield your time. Thank you, sir. So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Kirby.
You are welcome.
It sounded like we solved our technological constraints.
I'm so getting a head nod from Andrew. Okay. Yes, let's hope that's true.
Okay. Oh, I thought that was a danger or something, but apparently it was not.
It's all right.
Yeah,
it's.
I mean, I'm not wearing.
It is on.
Well, we'll talk about.
If it's red, it's not on. If it's green, there should be a way to keep it on red, but it just depends on which mic it is.
It's
on. Okay.
So the purpose and goal of today's training is to educate our new members, Mr. Mall and Mr. Simpson, about the Ethics Commission and its operations and the various programs, activities, rules, all of those things, but also to serve as a refresher. Some of you are not new to the commission, but you may not have gotten so much of an overview on the commission and its working, so we just thought it would be a really good opportunity for everybody to have the same information.
Yeah, is it going to show that? Or should I reposition myself here?
Yeah. We would love it.
Unclear. Yeah, we're trying to turn them on.
If not, I can go. I can take Andrea's seat. I can do whatever.
All right, I'll see.
I'm going to lay down on the floor over here.
We should probably be nice.
Relax.
Everyone goes on the other side of the table. Yeah. And it should warm up. History and the commission's history, and we'll go over some your governing ordinance documents and the summary of your committees and the work they've done, and then we'll get into some most common topics that you're likely to see. We do have for you, and Andrea is going to help us distribute, our boards and commissions manual that we've done for all members of the boards and commissions in the city, and it's a good summary of the various ethics laws and sunshine and public records that apply to you. As a city official, you may not realize this because you're a volunteer, but as volunteers, you are considered to be a city official because you're on a city board, and therefore you're bound by all the ethics laws and the sunshine and public records. So Andrea is passing out this for you to review, and you can get a good sense also of this, of some of the training resources and the information, how we present it to other members in the city. So, all right, so this is going to be probably the only part that's interactive, so you're hopefully going to get a little bit of a break. But when do you think the first ethics laws were enacted? Is it the founding of the United States, the 19th century, early 20th century, post-Watergate era, 1980s, or early 21st century? And I mean ethics laws in the United States. I don't mean before the Dr. Schreiber. You're questioning my slide.
Well, the emoluments clause.
All right, anybody for number one?
I'll see them.
Number one, yeah.
Oh, we got three takers for number one. All right, anybody for number two? Two, we got three takers. Three? No. Four? No. Five? No, and six. All right. So number one, and Dr. Freiberger is absolutely right. It is the emoluments clause. And what does that mean? Well, that means that if you work for the government at the federal level, you can't accept any gifts from a foreign country due to influence and all that. How did that start out? Well, it started out from this beautifully encrusted diamond snuff box that you see before you. So Benjamin Franklin, during the Revolutionary War period, was an ambassador of the United States to France. And his job was to establish a close relationship with the government of France, the King of France, in hopes of gaining support for the colonists in the war against Great Britain. And Mr. Franklin was incredibly successful in ingratiating himself in the aristocracy of France, and particularly the King of France. They became very close friends. So much so that the King of France bequested this diamond-encrusted snuff box. It has 109 diamonds on it, with the picture of the King of France in the middle, to Mr. Franklin as a gift when he returned back to the United States. So if you can transport yourself and your mind back to the 1780s during the Revolutionary War, and you're in Congress, and Mr. Franklin is doing a show and tell of his beautiful diamond-encrusted snuff box. How do you feel about that?
Jealous.
Jealous. Excellent. How else do you feel about it?
Maybe a little mad.
Mad. How come?
Mostly because I'm jealous that I didn't get one.
Okay, you're jealous you didn't get one, and you're mad you didn't get one. What else?
Maybe I'm a little worried.
About?
His allegiance to France.
Yes, right? Why? How come he would have any allegiance to France? I thought he was a member of the United States. He was given this incredibly expensive diamond snuff box. And the research, which we didn't have the benefit of back then, shows that gifts that are given to people, especially when they can spend somebody else's money, have an enormous amount of influence. So, yes, his colleagues were very worried about that, and they said, you have to return the snuff box. And he said, I can't do that. That would be rude and an affront to the King of France. And he would withdraw his support, likely from the United States, not the United States, the colonists, for the war. And they said, yes, but you could be susceptible to corruption and influence from him, or put the our country at risk being susceptible to their influence. So they came up with a compromise. Number one, they did put the emoluments clause in the Constitution, but they also allowed Mr. Franklin to keep this diamond snuff box in his possession so long as none of the diamonds were removed. And that worked really well until his daughter inherited it, and she took out the rings, the diamonds on the outer ring, to finance her lifestyle and trips to Europe. And by the early 1900s, all 109 diamonds were missing. They have slowly started to recover them, and this box and some of the diamonds sits in a museum in Philadelphia, so you can actually see it. But the original ethics law goes all the way back to the founding of our country. So we like to tell people, well, if you have to decline the gift, don't blame us, blame Benjamin Franklin. But no, more importantly, this is a great story. Yes?
What is the word you're saying?
Emoluments.
Emoluments. What does that mean? Emoluments.
Should I Google it?
I've never heard of it. I mean, I know I've heard that word before, but as soon as
you're going to put it on the spot like that?
I mean,
well,
it's,
he's a philosopher.
It's the basic, as I understand it, it's the basic principle of no self-dealing. I mean, you should not benefit in any way from your service to the state, personally.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's
I don't know
if
that's the definition, but that's also a concern that they had. So we'll take a moment out why, if you're interested in what that means.
And it's run out.
A profit from employment or office.
I should have known that.
A salary fee or
so profit. Basically right.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. A profit from office. And that is what they were worried. Whoa, where am I going? This clicker is. That's what they were worried about. Very much so. And so they reached this compromise. But the story is great because it really illustrates for us the difference between personal ethics, which is the golden rule that we were taught when we were children, treat others how you want to be treated, honesty, respect, being considerate of people that give you gifts, those kind of things, versus government ethics, which is narrowly focused on the prevention of public corruption. And they are apples and oranges, truly. And so when people rely on things that they were taught in a personal ethics standpoint, like Mr. Franklin, if I give this back, it'll be rude. That's okay from a personal ethics standpoint, but from a government ethics standpoint, he's susceptible to influence against his own country in favor of France. And so that could be, and he's personally benefiting from his government position. So that's public corruption. So you see that they have tension and they have different purposes. And if you rely on what you're taught from a personal ethics standpoint, it could lead you to the wrong result in government ethics, such as accepting gifts, which we just talked about, and also sunshine law. That's a really big topic in government ethics, and one that is, I think, most counterintuitive to how we communicate as humans and how we interact with everyone. In our private lives, it's a really good ethical thing to discuss ideas with people that are going to be in a meeting before we get to the meeting so that we're conscious of everyone's time and we're prepared and we can do the best that we can to be at our top shape in that meeting. If you discuss ideas with each other for the commission outside of a noticed meeting, you're going to have trouble with the sunshine law. So, yes.
Kirby, I have problems with the fact that you've got this column over here on the left that says personal ethics, and it's good to accept gifts. I mean, it's simply not good to accept gifts if the gift is designed to influence your vote. So,
this is just from a personal standpoint.
You know, of course, if a friend gives you a gift, great.
Right.
But that's lovely. But that's not always the case. If a friend gives you a gift that's effectively a bribe, it's not good from a personal or a governmental.
I don't disagree with that, but that graphic is solely limited to like a personal standpoint of where you're getting gifts from your neighbors or whatever it is, just to illustrate, but I appreciate that. We will try to hone in on that graphic. So that helps also to help us illustrate the purpose of government ethics, which is to increase trust in government. It's supposed to be of the people, by the people, and for the people. And one of the ways that we do that is through the ethics laws that we have here at the state and local level. And those ethics laws are not only designed to increase trust in government, they're also designed to help us prevent our self-serving bias. And I really like this graphic because it helps to illustrate perfectly what we all have. I have it, you have it, everybody in this room has it, everybody in the building and in the community. In other words, when we look at ourselves and find ourselves in a situation, we tend to see ourselves as a hero. We tend not to see the blind spots that we have. And so we all have a bias that can push us towards self-interest that is not in favor or for the benefit of the community. And we see this play out in the news and oftentimes where you have government employees, whether they're here locally in the state or across the country, you see these sometimes too often where somebody has taken action in their official position for their personal benefit. So you've got this Department of Transportation director that asked her employees to clear up storm debris at her house following a major storm. So she was put on leave, and then she was dismissed from her job. And an example that helps to illustrate that here locally happened years ago, more than 50 years ago. This comes from the Jacksonville Daily Record. But there was a county judge that was issuing marriage certificates and issuing an extra copy to the people that needed the certificates and charging for it, but personally putting the money in his pocket. And he made about 10% of his county judge salary from the extra certificates he was selling. And the third paragraph said, asked if he saw anything wrong, questionable, or illegal about it. He said he did not. You can be assured if I saw anything wrong, I would not be doing it, and my employees would not be doing it. But when we train on this, unanimously, people say that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And he's personally benefiting from his government job, but yet he couldn't see it. And so a lot of issues arise, not necessarily because people are intentionally trying to do something nefarious or they're corrupt. It's because we have this self-serving bias. And so the laws are designed to help us put up guardrails against that. So now we're going to transition into the history of our city's ethics program and commission. And it has not always been a great history. As we're going to go through this timeline, there has been, in the past, a good amount of corruption that's led to some of the reforms that we have instituted in our city today. So in 1965, there was massive corruption in both the city of Jacksonville government and the county of Duval government. There was like something like 12 to 15 people, I think, that were indicted and various scandals. There was an article that I read where one of the employees was at the Southside Businessmen's Club, and he said it was common practice to skim 10% off the top of any contract coming in. And it was so common, he was willing to talk about it publicly at the Southside Businessmen's Club. I mean, that's pretty outrageous. So 12 to 15 of them got indicted for those types of scandals, and then that led to the consolidation of the government in 1968 to try to impart, streamline the processes, and to eliminate the opportunity for corruption. And that's just to say 1989, I'm sorry. 1989, there was a big grand jury investigation into corruption in the city. John Delaney was the prosecutor on it, which led to the city establishing the Ethics Commission in 1992. And the Ethics Commission worked for 7 years to establish the Ethics Code in 1999. And then in 2011, the city council agreed to put a ballot initiative before the citizens to established the ethics office and the commission as independent, meaning they didn't answer to the president of city council or to the mayor, and that was passed unanimously. So that is a little bit overview of how we got where we are and some of the things that we have. The fight for independence in 2011 was not easy. I was on the commission at that time, and this was one of the editorial cartoons by George Gamble that ran in the Florida Times Union, and you can see the little watchdog and the Ethics Commission doghouse, and it's, we don't need a bigger watchdog. This one makes enough noise already. And some of the headlines that came up, some of the things that the council at the time was concerned about was the scope over the commission's powers, giving you all subpoena power, which, by the way, you do not have. because they were worried about you having too much power and what you would do with it. So there was a compromise on that. There was pushback from the press and from the citizens unanimously. There was a huge coalition of citizens from all walks of life, from all political persuasions, you name it. There was a huge coalition about it that showed up to every single council meeting where this was discussed, and they showed out in force, and the press helped with their editorials, and it put a lot of pressure on it. So you'll see council plan, shorter leash for the commission, panel backs off expanded power, once envisioned for the members, and then somebody directly said this. When Carla says she wants independence, she wants total independence from everybody, and that's just too far. So they were very concerned about how that could be used. And then there was a time where she was able to convince them of the need for it and to put it on the ballot, and it actually passed. And you say, you can see here in the second paragraph that Carla put in a ton of time with the Ethics Commission, but the unlikely coalition of community groups took an active interest. The NAACP, the Tea Party, Concerned Taxpayers, League of Women Voters, Jacksonville Community Council, and the Young Democrats. So it would not have happened. The Ethics Commission would not be where it is today, and the office wouldn't be, and we wouldn't be independent without the work of everybody in the city, the press, the citizens. And that has really led to the jumping off of what is a robust ethics commission here in the city. And I was just recently on the phone, who I talked to the state ethics commission general counsel quite a bit, and he was telling me how the program here and the issues that we deal with and that we call in about mirror what they're doing in Tallahassee, and we are the only commission in the entire state that does that. We're the only office in the entire state, and they're very impressed by what we're able to do. So to give you a little bit of perspective. Okay, so here's an overview of our whole city ethics program. Carla developed this. She calls it the ethics elephant, and there are a lot of components to it. So you have at the bottom the foundation of it, which are your laws and the codes, your citizens and the press. Those have the legs. Then you have the ethics officer. That's kind of the trunk at the front. You have the inspector general, that's the eye, and the ears are the hotlines and the whistleblowers, and the internal auditors, the council auditors and the ethics commission are kind of like the back, carrying the weight of the elephant, and if something goes wrong at the tail with a criminal prosecution, you'll have a grand jury and the state attorney's office, which we try to stay out of the tail. We try to be as proactive and prospective as we can on the front end of the elephant. But all of these are important, necessary components, recognized components nationally, and blue ribbon compliance and ethics programs. And we have them here in the city. They're just not all housed in the same department. They're housed in different departments between us and the inspector general, the council auditor, and the commission. But it's a great coalition that we have here. So the role of our program is to be the watchdog. We don't want to be a lapdog program where it looks good on paper. So I think you may have heard Carla tell her story about how when she was hired in 2007 as the first paid city's ethics officer, unbeknownst to her, she was hired as a lapdog. She was hired because there was an investigation into potential corruption in the award of contracts at that time. And so they thought it was a good idea to hire an ethics officer. And when she was hired, she answered to both the president of city council and the mayor. And issues would come to her on the hotline, and they would tell her not to look into them. Well, not they wouldn't tell her directly, but she would get word through the grapevine not to look into them. And she said, I don't think you understand. I'm a former federal prosecutor. I cannot do that. So that's how the fight for independence came about. And we are modeled after the watchdog, the safety patrol of the animal kingdom, if you will, that looks out for issues and tries to address them before they become problematic. And we don't want to be the attack dog pouncing on every minor violation. So the commission, as you all know, there you are. There are 9 members. Sorry, Mr. Simpson, you weren't a member yet when we made this, but there are 9 members of the commission. And each 6 of you are appointed by elected officials. So you're appointed by the president of city council, the chief judge, the mayor, the state attorney, the public defender, and the sheriff. And then the other three of you are appointed by those six. So that is how Mr. Simpson obviously was appointed. He went through the application process and as a citizen became a citizen member. The six that are appointed by the elected officials have to have certain professional qualifications. The other three, the only qualification is they have to be a registered voter of Duval County for 6 months or longer.
I see you stalked my Facebook page.
I didn't. Andrea did. Andrea goes, we don't have one. He's going to know that I stalked him on Facebook.
I will get you an official photo for your website. It's on my list. I know it. It will not include.
That's a good one, though.
It is, yeah. But it has my better half on it, which is probably the better.
And we love her too, right? Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. She was the highlight of the holiday party.
She was magnificent.
Yeah.
You should have her in your.
Yeah, we should.
Okay. So the commission is created under the Jacksonville Charter and Part 9 of the Ordinance Code. And the charter very importantly says that a structure shall be established for the Ethics Commission that ensures independence and impartiality. And the purpose of the commission is to provide a local forum for consideration and investigation of ethical problems and issues. So that's a broad, broad purpose. What does that mean? What can you do? Well, you can do no more and no less than what City Council has authorized you to do in the charter and under the ordinance code, and that is the following duties. Your main duty is to enforce the ethics code. How do you do that? You have a hotline through the ethics office for confidential information. You also investigate and issue findings regarding complaints. They are either sworn written complaints, so somebody has to fill out a form, sign it, get it notarized, or you can take in information anonymously, and if it looks like it could be a potential violation of the code, you will consider whether to self-initiate a complaint filed by the commission based on the anonymous information, and at least six members have to vote to self-initiate. You also can levy fines or penalties upon a finding of a violation of the ethics code. You have the authority to refer matters to the state attorney and the Florida Commission on Ethics. You can recommend changes in legislation, which is one of the things we did tonight, to City Council. You can interpret and issue advisory opinions, which has never been done in the history of the commission, to my knowledge. You can assist with training and education of local officers, seek and gather information to review circumstances that violate ethics conduct and make recommendations to the mayor and council. And you're the hiring committee, of course, for the executive director of the ethics office. So those are your main duties, and they do come from the charter and from Part 9 of the Ordinance Code. In addition to your main duties, you have some governing documents that guide you and what you're supposed to do and establish your policies and procedures for how you're going to run your commission business. Those are the internal operating procedures. Those are in your notebook, actually. The code is in your notebook with your duties and the internal operating procedures, and also complaint procedures. You are required by the code to establish complaint procedures that provide for due process to those that might be accused of a violation of the ethics code. And we're going to talk a little bit more, highlight some of those rules for you and how the work gets done on the complaint procedures, but those are also in your book. A summary of your internal operating procedures, the ones that you really need to pay the most attention to, as the commission does meet at least quarterly. If you would like and add a topic to the agenda, you should request it at least 2 business days prior to the meeting. If you are unable to attend a meeting, please advise us in advance to obtain an excused absence. If you don't let us know in advance, it's going to be an unexcused absence. The code and your internal operating procedures provide that if you fail to attend 2 out of 3 consecutive meetings without cause and approval, you will be replaced. Addition to that, yes, Ellen.
You want to finish your thought?
No, go ahead.
I say what I was going to say. Do you want to say something about what happens if you have a weak attendance record and you want to be reappointed at
yeah.
the end of your term?
Yeah, absolutely. So the other thing is that we are required by the City Council to track your attendance, because if you're up for reappointment, they want to know how many of your main commission meetings, not your committee meetings, have you attended. If you have an attendance record of 75% or better, you are not required to go back before the Rules Committee for approval for your confirmation. If you fall below 75%, and that does happen from time to time due to other obligations people have, then you have to go before the Rules Committee and explain your attendance record.
But it's during your reappointment.
Yes, it's during your reappointment.
Right.
Yeah. If you find that you can't attend something but you would like to participate virtually, you're going to have an extraordinary circumstance approved by the commission. And an extraordinary circumstance recently has been defined for you in your internal operating procedures. Great thanks to the great work of Cherry and helping us define that standard, and to the work of the internal operating committee that put this proposal before the commission last year. So an extraordinary circumstance includes the pandemic, health-related issues, military deployment, extraordinary family obligation, unforeseen mandatory business, or a previously scheduled unavoidable conflict. And that slide is off. I don't know what's going on. But you can't use your position as a commission member. So this is campaign season, so there are a couple things I wanted to highlight for you. You cannot use your position as a commission member in a manner that would give the appearance of an impropriety or decrease public trust. And so you can't endorse somebody running for office as a member of the commission. You know, I, Kirby, endorse Jane Smith for mayor. You can't do that because it looks like the commission is actually endorsing that candidate. Also, you can't run for office or campaign for elected office while you're a member of the commission. If that happens, and that has happened previously, where we've had members that are interested in running for judicial office, you'll have to resign effectively immediately from the commission. And lastly, only the chair makes media statements on behalf of the commission about the work of the commission. Things come up from time to time, and they might want to comment from the commission, and it's best to speak with one voice, and your operating procedures give that voice to the chair. Any questions about the operating procedures? Okay. All right, so most of your work on the commission is done through committees. You have four standing committees. The first, yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I did have a question.
Yeah.
It was way back,
that's
two
okay.
slides ago, though, but my question is about the commission's ability to levy fines, et cetera, whatever that slide was. What is the procedure for, I hope I'm saying this right, if the commission issues a fine on someone, how do we track whether or not they actually comply to what we've levied against them?
That is a great question, and I don't know the answer to that because...
I don't think we've ever levied a fine on it. Yeah.
Andrew, can you fix this, please?
I recall one situation where we did. I thought we issued a letter
for
some people to make contributions to charities or something along those
lines. Where's money go?
Yeah, we did do that where they were required to make a contribution.
Right, so we don't track that to see if that's been complied with?
No, because there would have to be a public hearing and there would have to be a finding of a violation of the code.
So we can levy fines, but we really can't enforce it.
There would be an enforcement mechanism through the Office of General Counsel for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And JJ,
I just don't know exactly what that enforcement mechanism would be.
Okay. I think that one of the respondents did follow up with the contribution that they made from one of those cases. They followed up on their own. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Is there a statute of limitations?
Yes, there is a statute of limitations, and it's 2 years.
What?
Okay, so most of your work through the commission is done through your committees, and you have four standing committees. The first is the complaints, and that primary function of the complaints committee is to address complaints filed with the commission that allege a violation of the code. They also develop and revise your complaint procedures and proposals to increase awareness of citizens on how to report violations of the code. This is definitely the most active committee of the commission. The second committee is internal operations. They oversee the implementation of the strategic plan for commission programs and projects. They develop and revise the internal operating procedures and rules concerning the operation of the commission. Third, your legislative committee, they are pretty active as well. They evaluate and recommend enhancement or amendment to local and state laws impacting ethics and government. So you track legislation at the state level, which we can help you do, and help to make recommendations for changes here locally, and also periodically review the ethics code to recommend any appropriate changes, particularly in light of what may be going on with your complaints. And lastly, open government develops policies and proposals to enable local governments to operate in an open and transparent manner and to engage with citizens. And that is rather kind of amorphous and takes on whatever project of interest is for the committee. So complaints are primarily driven by those things that are coming into the ethics office for complaints, and also the complaint procedures. Internal operating committee is primarily the strategic plan and your internal operating procedures we've already gone over. Legislative committee, things that they've done in the past is recommended legislation to changes in the ethics code, like section 602.401 was revised in 2018 to add a misuse position regarding city employee time and campaigning. To make sure people are not using city resources for campaigning. That's a legislative change. You're recommending one right now in the ethics education. From time to time, you've been asked to review and opine on ethics-related legislation from council members. So Councilmember Diamond has issued or has filed numerous ethics bills to increase transparency or require disclosure by certain elected officials or board members, and you all have been asked to opine on that. And the Open Government Committee, lastly, their last initiative was to work on a citizen education course. So just to give you a flavor of some of those things. In your packet, you have a description of the committees, and you're going to be asked to rank your proposal or your request for committee service and whether or not you would like to chair a committee. Some of you have already responded, so if you don't want to fill that out, that's fine. But for those who have not responded, we do need that information so that, and Ellen will get to that, I'm jumping ahead. Okay, lastly, and most importantly, is the complaints. This is not a great graphic for you to be able to see, but it helps to illustrate that complaints can come in two different ways. Like I said, they can come in on a formal written complaint, signed and notarized, and that's over here on the left-hand side, or they come in on anonymous information, and that's over here on the right-hand side. And when they, so if they come in different ways, they're going to travel different paths until they get to the middle where there's a preliminary investigation, and then the commission starts taking action, and all the rules apply in the same manner. But what I really want you to know is if they file a formal written complaint, and these are under rules, I'm skipping ahead a little bit. These are the primary rules you will operate on if you're on the complaints committee or if you are sitting as a whole commission to hear whether to self-initiate something. It's going to be rules 5, 6, 8, and 9. Rules 5 is very administrative. It's just what's required on the complaint form, the brief administrative review the office does to ensure that it's only one complaint against one person, that it's signed and it's notarized and things like that. If it fails that technical review, it can be returned by the office with the information as to why it's deficient. So it will never come to the commission. Rule 6 deals with a review of the sufficiency of the detail of the allegations to make sure they're actually alleging something that relates to a city employee or official, and also something that is relegated by the local ethics code. We do from time to time get complaints against people that have no connection to the city, or they have connection to the city, but what they're complaining about is their niece that won't move out of the house that they got in the estate. And it has nothing to do with what their niece does at the city. If that happens, then we return it to them. If a complaint is filed within 30 days of an election, it gets automatically returned per the complaint procedures, and they have an opportunity to refile. That has happened from time to time, but it doesn't come up very often. And to my knowledge, nobody's come back and filed after the election. So if there's a formal written complaint, you're going to travel under Rules 5 and 6. We're going to look at it to make sure it alleges a violation of the ethics code against a city official. If it does, it's going to come before the complaints committee for review and for discussion and potential investigation. And then the complaints committee
can do several things. They can dismiss it because they think that it's insufficient. They can dismiss it after they do an investigation and the facts don't seem to line up to what's being alleged in there. They can refer it to the state attorney or to the Florida Commission on Ethics. And there's also a procedure to dismiss something if they define it's not in the public interest. Let's say there was maybe an ethics violation, but the person's already been either terminated for it or they've been disciplined by their department. That's happened from time to time, and so sometimes those get dismissed for not being in the public interest. If a complaint comes in anonymously, information comes to us either through the helpline, by an unsigned letter with magazine clippings or big, bold black print, and we see all kinds of things, then it starts under Rule 9, and it comes to the Complaints Committee with the information, and they will start an investigation and figure out what to do with it and how to try to get more information. And if they feel like at a point in their investigation that they have enough information that would indicate a potential violation of the code, they will take a vote whether to recommend self-initiation to the commission. And if they do that, it comes back before the entire commission, and you all met last year in a shade meeting and considered whether to self-initiate on a matter or two. So, and in order to self-initiate, it has to be by a vote of at least 6 members. 6 of the 9 has to be at least a 2/3 vote. And that's happened before in the history of the commission, and then it proceeds under the rest of the rules. When you are in your complaints, all of your documents and proceedings are exempt from Sunshine Law and public records, so that's really important. If you're on the complaints committee or this commission's meeting in a shade meeting to determine complaints, you want to make sure you maintain that confidentiality and you don't share that information with anybody else. It's really important for the reputation and the integrity of the process. And that exemption remains, and it remains confidential until the complaint is either dismissed, the Ethics Commission determines whether there's probable cause, or the respondent requests in writing that everything become public. When you're operating in the shade, you have certain requirements. That is that you're not open to the Sunshine Law, the public can't come to your meetings. You still have to record them, and the recording becomes available after the case is resolved or you find probable cause. And again, we do get a good bit of our information from the ethics hotline, which is treated confidentially unless somebody provides us some identifying information, then that's subject to disclosure under Florida ethics laws or public records laws once the complaint's dismissed or there's a finding of probable cause. So any questions about the complaints process?
You didn't put the hotline number on up there.
It's at the end.
Oh.
A good point.
Okay.
Ms. Kirby, I want to ask you a question about Sunshine.
Okay, I'll talk to you after this because I just need to get through this. They've got some other matters on their agenda that they have to get through, but I'm happy to answer your question after the meeting is over. All right, so very quickly, here are common topics that you need to be aware of either because you need to comply with them or you might be asked to determine a complaint that relates to them. This is a compliance topic, Sunshine and public meetings. What's covered by the Sunshine? Any communication between two or more of you on a matter that could possibly come before the commission has to be in a public meeting, able to be heard by the public. So to give you an idea, I was in a board meeting one time with the city, and the meeting had ended, and there was a group of members standing around, and one of the members said to the chair of the committee, "I'm so glad that came up in our meeting. That's really important for our board to take action on." And so I'm standing behind the chair, and I'm shaking my head, no. And the chair says, "That's a great idea. Let's notice a meeting, and I'll talk to you about it there." And then the board member responded, "I don't care about the Sunshine Law. I don't need to discuss it in a notice meeting." The board said, "Well, I do." The chair said, "I do. So we're going to have it in a notice meeting." So it does happen where it's natural, right? Because what you have in common is your board service. And so that's what you want to talk about. But remember, any communications you have about your board has to be in a notice meeting after the gavel is open and before the gavel ends. So you can't have any side conversations walking in about what's going to happen or what happened at the last meeting or walking out after. And that's a very common misperception because we're all human and we want to talk about what we have in common. The Sunshine Law also prohibits any texting, email, phone communication. You can't take group tours, and you couldn't use me to share information among each other. And this does come up in terms of social media, where people will post things online and then one of their board members wants to respond. And that's a really hot topic right now about whether Twitter chat or Facebook chat breaks the Sunshine Law. And it could, potentially, for sure. So just don't post anything on Facebook or Sunshine relating to the commission. The second topic, this is a compliance topic as well. Let me back up. The Office of General Counsel has issued an opinion in 2019 that the Local Ethics Commission does not have any jurisdiction over Sunshine Law or public records. So you're never going to see any complaints about this, but you do, as a board member, have an obligation to comply with it. Who enforces the Sunshine Law? The state attorney. That's what the law provides for. Public records, that law provides that every document connected to your Ethics Commission business is to be preserved and made available for copying upon request. So make sure that you are preserving your documents. You're not throwing anything away. If it's something we pass out, like your agenda packets and everybody has it, we have a copy of it. If you take personal notes on it while you're in a meeting, make sure you save those and put them in your notebooks. That's why we have notebooks for you that we keep for you so that we can preserve your records for you. This applies to the content of the document. In other words, a public record is determined by what the record says, not where it's stored. Even if it's on your personal laptop or in your email or social media, whatever it is, it could be a public record. So just know that. If it's on, it's not exempt from public records because it's on a personal device. And this was a huge issue recently here locally when a judge granted summary judgment in a civil case to a developer company that had a lawsuit against Nassau County. They had a fight over the development. So the development company, Rainier, sued Nassau County and did a public records request and a document production asking for all communications, including texts. The response back from Nassau County was there were no texts. Then the county manager got fired, and when he got fired and he challenged his termination because he refused to delete his text messages, is what he said, and was fired, he produced 147 pages of text messages that were responsive to that request. So the judge found that there was a violation of the public records law by the Nassau County commissioners and their county attorney, and they sent that over to the state attorney's office. I went the wrong way. They sent it over to the state attorney's office, and they did an investigation into the Nassau County attorney, and they found that he was willfully advising his commissioners to delete their texts. Do not please text about commission business. If you do, please make sure you're saving it so that it can be retained. All right, last compliance topic for you, financial disclosures. In your packet, you have your Form 1 financial disclosure. You are required to file that with the state by July 1st of every year, or they're going to fine you, so make sure you do. In addition, because you file financial disclosures, you have to file a quarterly gift disclosure if you receive any gifts not from relatives, over $100. Then you file that each quarter. And we already talked about that.
There's instructions in here for filing the Form 1?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so you just fill it out and you file it with the local supervisor of election for the county in which you reside. So that should be Duval County.
In person, it's not electronic.
You can do it electronically.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me say this. You can scan it and send it by email. You can't file it in the electronic portal that the State Ethics Commission has because that's only for elected officials right now.
Okay.
Next year, you will do it electronically through the state. Okay. This is something that will come before you is gifts. We do have a local gift prohibition here in the city, and it says that there can be no gifts over $100 given to city officers and employees by a vendor, a lobbyist, or an organization that hires a lobbyist. That does come before the commission from time to time. You might recall several years ago we had some big cases about gifts. There's also a local prohibition that says you can't accept a series of gifts that add up to $250 in a year. That is in Chapter 602.701. 703 prohibits the vendor or the lobbyist from giving a gift, an illegal gift over $100. So that's one of the things that comes before the commission. And also part four of the local code 602, some of the issues you might see that come before you in complaints include a misuse of position, title, and authority, a misuse of city time and resources, including campaigns. So during the last campaign season, we had some complaints about a supervisor telling his employees to vote for a particular judicial candidate. We had an elected official who had somebody in his office post campaign contribution solicitations on the website, and that had to be taken down, and that was a brand new law, so we issued letters of instruction, but that gives you an idea of kind of some of the flavors of what you might see. You might see a misuse of confidential information. You might see somebody that doesn't file secondary employment disclosures, and as Ellen talked about, you might see something with post-employment restrictions, where somebody that worked on a contract over $250,000 goes to work for that vendor less than 2 years after they leave. So those are some of the things that you might see. We already talked about this, and those are the two summaries of the main points that you'll see on complaints, and this is our hotline number, 630-1015. So that's it. So that's the overview of the commission and your work, and a flavor for what you might see and how things might go.
Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you so much.
That was wonderful. I learned a new word. I got a refresher. I like it.
So we'll go back to our agenda. Kirby started the conversation. Using your name. Kirby started the conversation about the committee assignments. What I like to do is take into consideration your preferences when I'm making the committee assignments. So for those of you who've already submitted your preferences, I appreciate that. For those of you who haven't, if you want to have a voice in what committee you're supporting in the next year, I would suggest that you get that feedback to Sandy before the end of the day tomorrow, and then I will work on the committee assignments. I'm going to say I'll work on them Friday. I probably will, but I'll have them done by Monday at the latest, and then you'll get an email letting you know what committees you're on. What we're basically looking for is your first choice, your second choice of what you want to serve on. If there's a committee you absolutely do not want to be on, I'd want to know that. And then if you have an interest in serving as a chair of one of the committees, I'd like to know that. And I don't want to exaggerate too much, but this is agonizing for me. I want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to get their first choice. Sometimes it is not possible because of the number of people who have to serve on the different committees. But I will make my best effort to get you the committees that you want to be on. And if I can't, know that I will be in pain over it. I will not be happy, but I'll do my best. Any questions about that? No. Okay, excellent. Do we have to say anything more about the filing of the form?
No, it's just in your packet, so there's nothing to prevent you from filing it before July 1st. You can file it as soon as you're ready and you have your year-end information, but it does take into account all the information from 2022. So you're always filing for the last calendar year, which is 2022. The only exception is Mr. Simpson. His is due in 30 days.
Oh.
I'll change the date I was getting ready to put in my phone. So.
Is it because he's new? Is it because he's new?
Yes. Yeah.
So does that apply to Mr. Mall as well?
Yes. Yeah, I was just trying to think about his confirmation.
I think we're outside of that 30. But yeah. What's the, if I file it tomorrow, what are they going to do?
Nothing.
Is there a punishment?
So, no, because you didn't know. So go ahead and get that filed.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Yeah.
I have a
note. And we'll get it to you.
I have a note to get it filed.
Okay,
so.
Perfect.
It should be too easy.
I usually drive it down to the office downtown, and they could not be nicer or more helpful.
Or you can, we're happy to send it over there. There's also an email address. We'll send it to you. You can scan it and email it in.
Okay. Yep, we'll get it done.
Thank you.
I'm just going to make a comment about the ethics director performance review. I told you earlier today that one of my responsibilities as the chair is to serve on the post-employment appeals committee, which I do. Another is to serve on the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee, and somehow I am the chair this year. So that's another obligation that this chair has. And the third thing is that I'm responsible for doing the evaluation of Kirby. And I have the evaluation tool. I'm working on it. One of the things that I wanted to do that I started working on today is talking to the staff to get some feedback, and then I'm going to present the evaluation to Kirby, and then I'll present the evaluation to all of you probably at our next meeting. So I just wanted you to know I was working on that. That's one of the responsibilities, and it's well underway.
Yeah. And I just have one point of clarification about Mr. Mall's financial disclosure. He was appointed effective January 1st, so you are not outside your 30 days. You could not have sat when you were confirmed by council because there wasn't a vacant seat.
That's correct.
Yes.
I got it.
Yeah. It just took me a few seconds to get there. So you're good. Yep, but we'll send you the email address for the Supervisor of Elections office.
Perfect. Thank you.
Excellent. Uh-huh. Is anyone aware of any other new business that we need to discuss? Anything you were hoping that would come up that didn't?
No, I think that's all we're that good? I know of.
Okay. So we're at the public comments portion of the meeting. So, Mr. Oliver, I'll invite you to make any public comments. And at this point, it could be on any topic that you want. And you'll have 3 minutes once you get started. And I'll go ahead and set a little timer when you start talking.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you.
My name is Carnell Oliver. Address is on file. Not a while back, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can I get you just to restart the clock?
Sure.
Yes, my name is Carnell Oliver. A couple of weeks ago, but I'd say about maybe a month ago, I went and I done some research about certain city council members receiving taxpayer dollars from the state level. They're also receiving local funding from a local level. That's a conflicting issue for me on local level. I had a nice conversation with Kirby about this. One of the things that she made clear to me, maybe we need to increase transparency. I've just emailed her maybe 15, 20 minutes ago about certain things that I've written to our state representatives about raising the bar of accountability for our local elected officials. Maybe that information will be shared among you as board members. But on a local sense, one of the things that I believe that we need to do, we may need to bring the subpoena authority back to the Ethics Commission. Number two, shortening the time frame from 2 years from fines to 6 months. And raising the standards of two protocols. Number one, you pay a fine. Number two, you violate again. You're treated like a common criminal. You do community service. That way the public can see that elected officials are held accountable for making poor judgment calls. There are certain council members that I want to see publicize who they work for. I know the council president works for an engineering company that's doing the Emerald Trail. I just got the disclosure information on that. I can't get the name of the minority businesswoman owner, but that's a conflicting issue for me. A lot of the things are being hidden from the public because of our elected officials there's not a lot of guardrails to hold them accountable. So I want to really put a focus when it comes down to the legislative body to really work with this time frame that we have with the Florida legislature, especially Spencer Roach, who is the chairman of Ethics, to come down a little bit more harder on local elected officials. But what we can do on local level with self-reporting when it comes down to public grants, the PSG, self-reporting, transparency. I want to see a certain level of standards when it comes down to transparency. I want to see who's getting what, and I want to see where the money's going. And to me, that's one of the most important things. That's just one of my pet peeves. I want more accountability when it comes down to our local elected official, and that's my priority when it comes to the legislative body.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Does anyone have any announcements? Anything else you want to address before we adjourn? Okay. Hearing and seeing no one with anything to add, the meeting is adjourned. It is 5:56 p.m. Thank you for your time and attention. Great meeting.
Nice to see everybody.
It was nice to see everybody.
Yeah.
New faces and old.